Welcome to the El Arpa podcast, the home for cultural chit-chat in and outside Madrid. People will talk. Welcome to another edition of the El Arpa podcast. How are you, Super M?
Very well, thank you. You? Super E?
That's better. I'm okay. So it's been a historic weekend. Liverpool losing the Champions League final at the hands of the Dark Master himself, Dart Sergio Ramos. And the repeal of the 8 movement having great success in Ireland. More of that in part two, less of the Ramos stuff, because this is not a football podcast, even though we had the special edition of the Mo Salah stuff. So lots to talk about. We also went to another exhibition. We're going to talk about Ramadan, Muslims, and other things. I emphasize Muslims because I just wanted to correct, see a doubt, as in, like, is it going to be something controversial? But no, we're just talking about, like, inoffensive culture, customs, and Ramadan, and all that kind of stuff, aren't we?
Sure.
Great, yes. So, you know, it's going to be fun. What else are we going to do?
Teach you how to pronounce Mo Salah.
I think you just said it perfectly. So that's the start and simultaneously the end of that lesson. So, all right then. Well, there's going to be a very brief, breve, short introduction. Cue the musical interlude. And we'll be joining you in part two. That's two. Show, let's get down to business. So where do we even start? I would say abortion.
Okay, it's gonna be a light one today.
No, get that out of the way and we can get into the normal things then afterwards. I'm sorry I made the joke about the four-year-old off podcast. I think it would be better to do that on the camera or on the podcast and get your natural reaction to it.
Well, I can just scream now and that's it.
No, it's okay. I won't allude to the joke because I'll look like, I sound like a monster. So, good news is the 8 was repealed. So, abortion is going to be legal in Ireland. You were saying to me off podcast that this was a sin against God.
What?
Would you like to elaborate?
I didn't say that.
I'm only joking. So, yeah, so obviously we're both in favour of that because, yeah, I mean, broadly, it's legal in...
Are we?
I never actually asked you, so...
Yes, we've not spoken about it.
Okay, I won't make...
I'm not going to let Lisa decide it.
I won't make any assumptions about your belief on that. It is legal in Spain, isn't it? Yes?
I think it's, like, up to, like, 3 months or if there's, like, some serious risk for the mother or, like, some serious risk for the baby.
Typical stipulations. No one
yeah,
is legal.
Yeah.
I knew a few years ago a group were trying to get it re-banned. Do you remember if that was associated with a political party or was it just a fringe group of right-wingers that maybe were kind of against it?
I don't remember. Well, they've talked about changing it a number of times, you know, backwards and forwards with the Conservative Party. And I don't know. I think it's a very, like, complex subject, you know. I think it's a very private one as well.
That's true. Don't worry. I'm not going to ask you any more about your personal opinions.
No,
or,
no.
Or
it's,
podcast.
Not, it's not about like that, but I mean that, you know, that, that well, it's kind of like something that everybody's, you know, suppose you have to respect
Well, that's what it is.
Everybody's opinion.
Pro-choice, no? If you choose to or choose not to. The whole idea is that that choice is respected.
Yeah.
We won't go into the technicalities or the legalities of it because it's been very broadly covered, I think. And if you are aware of it, I'm sure you've been following it anyway. And that being said, it's very hard to kind of go into great detail about abortion debates anyway because we already know what the default positions are. I've listened to a few podcasts about the abortion campaigns in America because at the moment they're rolling back a lot of rights regarding abortion in the States. Right. And, you know, I listened to the podcast kind of wanting to learn more, but really at the end of it, you don't really learn that much because at the end of the day, you have people who are pro-choice and people who think it's a crime, I guess, or, you know, because they're very religious, maybe they have qualms about supporting it, for example. So, in you know, by us not talking about the ins and outs of the actual thing, I think the listener's not going to miss out really too much because I think people already know where they stand on the spectrum. But what I will say is I've sent this to you. This happened like with the marriage equality referendum in Ireland as well. Like the results of both, because the referendum for the marriage equality in Ireland and for abortion was passed with a great majority, which I knew that was going to happen. And anybody who with any common sense in Ireland would have known that was going to happen as well. But what I hate, and this is like less serious, obviously, because like, you know, it's a great victory. That's the most important thing. You know, it's just the comments of like, I mean, because my sister, well, I know somebody who's sniffing the tongue there. No, you can leave that bit in. But no, like Sky News, like anytime foreign newspapers talk about things, like in Ireland in general, they get it wrong. But when, especially when it comes to like an emotive issue like this, because one Sky reporter, and I've seen them do this so many times in other countries, it's just like, it's so lazy and it's like a quick way. It's like a hack. It's like a journalistic hack to get like to plug into some kind of like false narrative just to kind of, and then adopt this tone of kind of knowingness, you know. And he's like standing underneath a picture of Teresa of Calcutta going, "This very much is the conservative Ireland we know." It's, when you see that, it's just cringy. And somebody I know said, "Go back to Brexit land." I'm not going to say who it was. To Sky News. So I don't like Sky News anyway because I think it's a very inferior news organization compared to others. If I had to choose one in the UK, it would have to be the BBC, the much maligned BBC. But to be honest with you, they haven't gotten too far wrong in a lot of things. And The Guardian, of course, but then again, they have their deficiencies as well.
I was going to say this.
Also as well, like again, I don't want to ever read social media ever again because, no, there's this thing, it's like,
in general.
Well, if you're a YouTuber as well, well, not that we're really YouTubers because there's people like whose job it is to be a YouTuber.
Yeah,
but,
we're not influencers.
Well, we can never be influencers now because they just want BuzzFeed content and your Jake Pauls pushed to the front of the queue and then kind of like small creators being pushed to the side. So that's kind of like, that's another separate issue. If you've been following that, you'll see that in newspapers as well, where they've removed the sub YouTube page. And anyway, that's another issue that I don't want to get into. But anyway, but basically people are saying that you should delete your Facebook for obvious reasons, for political reasons, but also your social media in general, because you know, it's kind of like bad for your mental health and everything. But I think I would delete it so I wouldn't have to see comments on news articles anymore. Because it's all like these things like, "Well done, Ireland. Welcome to the 21st century. 18 years late, though." All that kind of stuff. And or like, you know, "You finally gone out of the Middle Ages." That was from a Brit as well. They had a royal wedding last weekend as well. Talk about medieval hangovers, you know. Fucking royal weddings, you know. So, but like, you know, for anybody who knows Ireland, like, there's two things to be said here. One, it hasn't been a Catholic country in effect for 30 years. Because even someone said on another comment, like, "Oh, finally out of the yoke, out from under the yoke of the Catholic Church," which is a massive overstatement. And then, like, one guy goes, "Yeah, right." As if, like, the Catholic Church had some kind of hegemony over Ireland, you know. And in actual fact, it hasn't been a Catholic country for in practical terms for 30 years. And the seeds of this referendum, you know, it takes a long time to for this to kind of generate the momentum to you know, cause a referendum, to start a referendum, for people to start talking and for a whole movement to develop. But the seeds of this referendum were definitely sown 25, 30 years ago. Because it's a generation now, and even younger as well, who've been spearheading this campaign. And as you've been explaining to me last week as well, you've been reading my book, well, the book that I own, not that I wrote it, Irish on the Inside. And I think anybody, like, also, you know, this is a general rule of thumb. If an international media is talking about Ireland, take it with a pinch of salt, because it mightn't be accurate. But also as well, if you're familiar with Irish history, you know, you'll know that the narrative that's coming in some newspapers now, this abortion referendum thing, is some, like, dramatic break from this kind of Catholic conservative Ireland. And don't get me wrong, that was there, but Irish people are victims of that too. And it is true that women and children were treated horribly by the Catholic Church. Magdalene laundries, babies found in, like, pits and sewers and everything as well. So this is in no way an attempt to downgrade, like, that element of our history as well. And that very shameful part of our history, you know, there's no getting around that. But also, by the same token, that if you see this kind of liberal thought of, like, well, abortions should be legal, or homosexual people should be able to get married, of course they should. This, I think, is a continuation of, like, this liberal rights-orientated philosophy, which I think has been present in Irish history for a long time. So I'm not saying it should go completely over to my side, which is, like, you know, this is like an unbroken continuation of, like, Irish people are great, we're always doing the right thing. But yeah, I think it's something to take into consideration. I think it'd be wrong to kind of, like, just go to this, like, lazy media driven narrative of, like, well, poor peasants, Catholic Church, Bashir and Bagara, and then suddenly they've kind of woken up and done the right thing, you know. So I think if you listen to the Blind Boy podcast, he's always preaching empathy. If you listen to this podcast, I think I would preach to you not to fall prey to the easy Facebook update. Don't fall prey to the catchy phrase that sounds very dramatic and gives you a kind of surge of kind of, like, am I so intellectual that I know everything? Because very often that doesn't really encapsulate an entire culture, an entire history, or the complexities of something like this abortion referendum. So, you know, that being said, to summarize, Catholic Church has done some very shameful things in the country. So this is in no way an attempt to whitewash that. But also as well, the most important thing is congrats. I think it's a great step for the country. I think it's a tremendous success. And I'm happy that Ireland is not going to be exporting its problems to England. And it'll be able to treat people, particularly women, with the equality and the kind of care that they deserve, whether it's a crisis pregnancy or if there's a fetal complication and they need medical help. So, you know, all in all, fantastic news. Just delete Facebook. So I think that kind of sums it up. You've been following, speaking of social media, someone's been down a Twitter thread black hole.
No, it's just interesting. I mean, I only, like, keep on reading when something like attracts my attention.
I think you're the only person to do that.
No, well, you ask, like, you know, like, it's not, I don't read every single thread just for the sake of it, but for some reason I seem to have a lot of Irish people on my Twitter feed. I wonder why that is.
I have no idea. Maybe it's because of Gabriel Byrne. He was electric in that movie with, what's that one? Kaiser Soze.
I don't know, I thought you were going to say, like, gay or for what.
Well, he is in that one as well, actually, isn't he?
Yeah, like...
Usual Suspects, that's the one.
Ah, okay.
With Kevin Spacey.
Usual Suspects, indeed.
Yeah, now he is part of those for real. But anyway, they were discussing the kind of... Well, again, yeah, if you're not Irish, it's going to sound like bizarre, but it does make actually a lot of sense in Ireland. But you can explain this part, because you've actually been down this thread... the old tweet machine, so please enlighten us.
Well, no, it was just interesting because, like, I don't know, apparently somebody complained about somebody challenged the referendum on the basis of, like, the fact that people weren't ID'd correctly or something like that, and then basically Irish people were saying that, well, they were sharing stories of, like, how they had been ID'd, and it's basically, it was just highlighting the fact that in many places in Ireland, people know each other and they know personal details about each other. So, like, it's like a much more personal matter. So that's not, like, in detriment of, like, legality, but precisely is like a better way of identifying who people are,
Exactly.
you
Yeah.
know,
Well, oh,
and
just.
keeping up to date with everything, and you know, only like
Yeah, no, it's great.
a
Yeah, what
bit gossip as well,
it is a bit of gossip, yeah, because he told a
a
story of
bit, yeah.
one teacher who he said, "Are what he was? Are you Murphy's son?"
Yeah, something like that,
Said,
and
"I am.
then
You'll be late for school then," because he was a teacher, wasn't he?
yeah,
Yeah, so he
so
never met
he
that
was
man,
quite
but the
sure,
man knew what his profession was and who
and
his
who
father
he lived
was.
and everything,
That
yeah,
happened to me as well a
where
lot
he lived,
when I was growing up because my father is a local businessman.
yeah,
I've never seen a man professionally go to as many funerals as he has.
oh
Because for all the clients that have passed on, and he has to show face, he's like a politician that way.
yeah,
So
kissing babies.
kissing babies, not that far, but almost. So yeah, so that's the abortion stuff. Let's move on to lighter things.
It was a bit of a weird ending talking about your dad going to funerals. And that was the abortion stuff, okay.
I don't know. It's very inclement weather today. It's affecting my
Yeah.
thinking. So I don't want you to think, the listener, like that we're just being very frivolous with this. But at the end of the day, the referendum's passed, and we're well. I'm supportive of it. I haven't asked you, but so you know, I think we can joke around now because the hard work's been done by a lot of great people. And so if you think like, why are they making so many jokes about it? Ah, look, the mission's been accomplished. So
Ah, but because we want to.
and because we want
Ah,
to.
because we want to.
And Des Bishop, who we mentioned in this podcast before as well, was offering lifts from Dublin Airport to train stations or bus stations so people could come home and vote. So people, a lot of people flew home, and he kind of picked people up and dropped them off at stations and everything. He did the same thing for the marriage equality referendum as well, back when that was happening. So,
Was he doing a routine while driving, or?
no, but he did say for this time around, I have to be back. I have to be finished by 8:30 because I have a gig in Dublin. So you know.
Fair
He's a
enough.
comedian, so he has to
He
do
could
it.
have given out tickets.
Put bread on the table. Well, look, they're going home. They could be going to Kerry or something to vote, so they're not going to be in Dublin anyway.
He wasn't gonna give them a lift from Dublin to Kerry, was he?
Well, of course not. But he's not going to give them a ticket either because they're going to Kerry, so they're not going to be in Dublin for the show.
Oh, well, maybe they'll stay for the night.
No, because they have to go home and vote.
All right,
My
just
God, thank God.
spoil the whole
The thing. I think the
imagination.
referendum was passed in spite of people like you. that sounded wrong. You can edit this part out because I'm gonna sound like a real dick. On that part,
Well, maybe we should leave it in.
justifiably. We went to Casa Arabe,
Yes.
in where that is, Retiro Park.
Where we live, yeah.
And
Maybe.
yeah, so you know more about this culture than I do, so you give me your feedback.
Well, it was a very small photographic exhibition,
Yeah.
but it was just like nice enough. I mean, there wasn't much to get out of it, to tell the truth, but it's part of like an initiative of like some events that are taking place at the moment that are called like Ramadan nights. And this was like to basically showcase different mosques or different like atmospheres around mosques in different parts of the world,
Yeah.
which is interesting because well, I think one is just to bring them closer to people that perhaps don't understand what's going on at this time, and also it was interesting in that it showed pictures of like mosques in places such as China or Vietnam that you know Western people don't normally associate with Islam. So
And even Mo Salah, the footballer, he I think has that
you mean you haven't watched the video of you of like how you have to pronounce it?
out. Is this the whole aubergine lemon thing, or what was it? The thing that's going doing the rounds now. This year's purple dress.
No, it was a proper video where they told you like where Egyptian people told you how you had to pronounce it.
It's Salah, no?
It's like Muhammad Salah.
Salah,
Yeah, Salah. It's
yeah,
like
like you're some kind of like inner city Cork person. Salah,
no,
Salah, Salah.
like it's an Arabic letter.
Yeah.
It's like that aspired
Well,
H.
I used to say that before to you, no? In Salah, instead of in Salah.
Inshallah. Yeah, but that's different. That's
Yeah,
a different word.
but I was saying in Salah to you.
Ensalada.
No, it's Allah. Before every Liverpool match, it's like, it's Allah.
Yes.
It's like, it's Allah, we trust. Or it's Allah, we trust. Because he's like our talisman. So.
Okay.
It was a pun.
Some purists won't like this joke because it's grammatically flawed. But most people don't know Arabic, so it actually works.
How many Arabic speakers are there in the world?
Oh, I couldn't give you a figure, but certainly a lot.
Well, if you're enough there pissed off with my mangling of the word, I'm surely behind Sergio Ramos in the queue of people to throw shoes at. So you're also saying as well that the costumes, and obviously in some of the countries are different. So in China, I guess, and the non-traditional countries that we think of when we think of the Islamic world, do you feel that they were more reflective of local dress, or maybe it was like a mixture of...
I think
of...
so, yeah. Well, I think they were a bit of a mixture, because obviously they had some like headdress that was more akin to the usual Islamic one, but yeah, it had like certain specific characteristics. And so that was nice, because there was a bit of a contrast between the buildings themselves, which were pretty like, you know, homogeneous throughout the countries.
That's
and
true.
The outfits, which were a bit different.
In the BBC video we mentioned, well actually before I say that, the Salah thing I wanted to say is like that I think he's raised, like Egyptians probably feel like he's raised the profile of Egyptian football, which undoubtedly he has. But another way he's had an impact is that he's raised awareness, I think, about Ramadan, because a lot of football fans are like, you know, oh, will Ramadan affect the Champions League final?
Which of course is the most important thing about Ramadan.
Well, it's a genuine question, because I don't know how an elite level footballer copes, but I think he had 2 days around the final where he could actually eat properly. I think he, and then adds it on to the end of the Ramadan period. Also in the video, in the BBC video, in Iceland, Icelandic Muslims, some of them, well, depending on this, well, this one parish, they adapted their Ramadan kind of fast to just 18 hours compared to whatever the normal length is, or they made it shorter.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. I mean, but that comes from like...
because the day is longer, no?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in countries where there's like an authorization not to have to wait till dusk, because
it's
Imam, an official thing.
Yeah, it was the Imam who was leading it, so...
Yeah, because, you know, some northern countries, like northern Europe, depending on when it falls, they can go on for like... Yeah, some like even 20 hours of light, and it can be very taxing.
There's a good news story in France of an immigrant who climbed 4 stories to rescue a baby, example.
I think it was Egyptian as well.
He was not African. I can't remember where he was from. But it's great, though, because he's been really, like, the mayor of Paris called him, and he's going to Champs-Élysées on Monday to meet Macron.
All I heard was that she was going to try and sort out his papers.
Yeah.
To stay in LA. Well, that's nice of her. Yeah.
It's just a great news story. Because, but at least he could maybe use it to his advantage and actually get papers and stuff like that. So, because generally they're messed around in France. So this is kind of one thing. But also Mo Salah is just, I think everybody loves him. Everybody's like wishing him the best to get fit for the World Cup. And he's just a very likable person, great footballer. I think everybody's heart was broken when he was crying, when he was being stretchered off in the Champions League
final. Well, honestly, like, having had that injury a number of times, I know how painful it is.
Did Sergio Ramos take you out as well?
No, but I had a girl do that to me in a basketball match, just exactly the same. And I can honestly say that I think she did it on purpose, and it was the same as he did.
Yeah.
You know, because it's something that is like... You purposely need to hold on to an arm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's what like Ramos knew.
It's not fortune. It's like,
yeah. But he elbowed our keeper in the face, and he fell
over. Not that he needed any help to be a bit dizzy. But okay.
You leave that man alone.
Sorry, Liverpool fans.
He's 34 years old.
No, I suffer for them. I mean, I was supporting Liverpool, of course.
Of course, me too. Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't.
I just. Like, Madrid are a curious team because they haven't played well for 2 years, but they've won 3 consecutive Champions League titles. Anyway, it's neither here nor there. It's not a football podcast.
Yeah.
But Salah, do you think Salah? Do you think he has raised even a pause? Like, for example, right? We said before, father Tay, kind of like Irish people are, you know, humanized them in England, for example, or what else was it? Gaza, when he was crying, humanized footballers to a nation that before that were kind of thinking of hooligans when they thought of football. So I don't know. Do you think for a continent that has a very complicated relationship with the idea of immigrants coming from North Africa and beyond, do you think maybe Salah has changed some perceptions, or do you think it's just a classic case of, well, we like one of them, but we'll continue on with our prejudice against the rest of them?
You know, like, from my own personal experience when I lived in the UK, the number of times I heard, you know, like, yes, you're Spanish, but you're not like them. And then it's like them who, you know what I mean? So,
ooh, the fascists.
People, no. Like they just said, oh, you know, Spaniards are dirty, Spaniards are lazy, Spaniards
oh,
are...
Oh, you mean England? Sorry. I thought you meant when you were in Egypt and they're like saying, oh, you're actually nice, and because they had a bad relationship or something with Spanish people. When you're
I mean, people in Egypt are lovely that way, and all I heard was like, oh, admiration, because they love Spain so much. Because
they get Spanish TV sometimes. Well, I know they do in Morocco, maybe they don't in Egypt, but they do in Morocco, okay?
So. No, but they in general, like, Islamic countries love Spain because they feel like there's a common heritage.
Yeah.
You know?
It's fascinating, that thing. It is.
Yes.
Intriguing. Are you getting antsy because you have to go?
No.
What?
No. Yes, okay. No, I don't think, like, all I would say was, like, yeah, the Salah thing, I don't think it will work because people just isolate them and they don't really, you know.
Exactly. Well, it's like the Terry
Wogan. They think they're an exception.
It's a Terry Wogan effect, I think, really. You know Terry Wogan?
Certainly, yes. Right. I didn't even know he was Irish, you know.
Exactly.
That's how they stripped him of his Irishness.
You know Bob Geldof? I learned what he said about 1916 recently.
What?
The big old bollocks. I'm not going to go into it. It's almost the weekend.
Next day, next podcast then.
Okay, so you have to go, okay. I have so much to say about Morocco and why they should get the 2026 World Cup. Which is like...
I know.
Muslim and football and geopolitical related.
But people will have to pay to hear that. And rightly so.
To
read that.
In box-to-box football. The next edition of the World Cup magazine, that'll be going in there for the World Cup. So probably in June, and then I'll have another thing about Alex Ferguson, which is dropping in August. And I wonder, is he okay actually, because he was poorly recently, and I've just forgotten there's been no news about him. So yeah, it's actually, it's very interesting, the whole Morocco thing. But no, he's still alive. You can't keep a good Scot down. Tough man that he is as well. So okay, so we have to cut this short. I can tell you this amazing
what
Morocco
do you mean
thing.
Short like
No. It'll have to do for another weekend, another podcast. We could have been like a little bit longer because we actually are on a roll here. We have a racha. We have some conversation going. I want to say stuff about Morocco, and I'm conscious of the fact that you want to leave, so that's why I'm just talking without stopping. Okay, well, all right then. Well, we'll just end it there then. abruptly, unsatisfyingly, and with a lot more to say.
Because I'm broadcasting that to
you. We'll join you in part three, I guess, if we have time. So, bye-bye. What a part two. That was amazing. Thank you for all your contributions in today's edition of the podcast.
You're welcome.
You can find us on LARPA1, which is our Twitter handle, and Instagram, YouTube, and what's that one? Patreon, where you can give us money, all under the handle of LARPA Media. We've had a few videos put up recently, one for a Renfe competition, which we mentioned in the previous episode of the podcast. So a video online connected to one of the stories that we've written. We've also uploaded a kind of very simple neighborhood video, just like very natural scenes, things happening in the backgrounds, just the sounds, the ambient sounds. I've seen this style done a lot in a few places, and whenever I've seen it, it's always struck me as a very diligent and very interesting way to convey a message to show a documentary, because very often we get caught up with the bim bam bam kind of flash editing and kind of heavily stylized sometimes, but this is just like people in their natural environment doing their things, and when there's less intervention from the editing room, it just becomes a lot more observational. I think you have a special connection into the story in that case. The BBC did this very well as well in some cases, because as we mentioned in part two of the podcast, we're talking about like Muslims in Iceland, and their video on their YouTube page is very interesting because it's just like the people talking, explaining their things, and then it's this different scenes are connected by text. So it's not fully gone down the road of just like flying the wall. But it's almost there, and that's perhaps the wrong term to use, because when we think of flying the wall documentary, it's a little bit different. I guess I'm thinking of people talking to the camera, things happening, it's very active, and there's a camera crew collecting it, but in these kind of videos there's no story as such, just things happening and people perhaps talking sometimes, but it's kind of unfolding at a much slower pace. So it's kind of more interesting. So we've done a video like that a little bit because it was pissing rain the other day in Carpathiana, and I was stuck in it and thunderstorm, so I took my camera out and just got some shots of it and also some interesting shots of the city. So interestingly enough, you're also continuing your salsa adventure.
Mumbai salsa adventure.
So you haven't learned anything since the last episode, no?
Not really. Well, I don't have to learn. I have to practice the little that I've learned.
How would you describe verbally those steps?
Duck-like? Yes.
I'll take that.
This is what you say in Spanish for clumsy.
Torpe.
No, pato.
Pato.
Dizzy duck. Pato marea.
Vas a meter un pie, no?
What? Put my foot in it?
Yeah.
I'm more likely to put my foot on yours.
Okay. We'll do a special edition of the podcast, dancing on the podcast, you describing the different moves, interspersed with my anguish screams as you step repeatedly on my feet. That seems like a painful but good way to end this podcast. So thank you very much for joining us. And you can find us here, there, and everywhere. Ciao, ciao.
Bye.
The El Arpa Podcast, the home for cultural chit-chat in and outside Madrid. People will talk.